2017 was a big year for science. There were some important breakthroughs in medicine and in our understanding of the universe. And NPR science correspondent Joe Palca joins us now to take a look at a few of the year's highlights. Hi, Joe.
Howdy.
And let's start with the iceberg that broke off the Larsen C ice shelf on the Antarctic Peninsula in July. Do we know what caused that break?
Well, I mean, I think that you have to keep in mind that this ice shelf is calving icebergs all the time. What I particularly liked about this story, though, is that if you read a European description of it, it's an iceberg the size of Luxembourg. But if you read a U.S. description, it's an iceberg the size of Delaware. So you get
right.
your pick. But these things happen. And, of course, everybody's, you know, quick to say, oh, must be global warming. Let's see. That's got to be. But truth is, it's a little hard to say for sure. As I say, this kind of thing happens.
But this one was seen as very significant.
Well, it was because it was huge. I mean, Luxembourg isn't that big, but it's still pretty big for a piece of ice. And the one thing, though, that you have to keep in mind is that this ice shelf is actually floating in the ocean. So when this breaks off, it's not like a new chunk of something falls into the sea. It's actually not going to raise sea level. But if the whole Larsen C ice shelf should collapse, then there's a chance that the icebergs behind it would come into the sea, and that could significantly raise sea level around the world. So, yeah, it's a big deal. It's a big deal. I'm just saying it's not unheard of.
All right. Another one that made your list this year is the neutron star collision that was detected by LIGO, the Advanced Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory. Tell us more, first of all, about that. What did they discover?
Well, first of all, I want to congratulate you on saying the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave
yes.
Observatory. That was very good. So what they discovered was this amazing a thing that Einstein predicted in his general theory of relativity, that if two huge, massive objects were to merge together, there would be a brief ripple in space-time known as a gravitational wave. But Einstein thought that these things would be so faint that they would never be detected. Other people thought differently, and with modern technology and lasers and interferometers, they were able to see, in quotes, this gravitational wave ripple past the Earth. And it was exactly the shape that Einstein predicted for this kind of event. So it was just awesome, spectacular science, I thought.
Well, and I encourage people to go and Google LIGO, because you can see the way that we detect these gravitational waves. There's one big, huge arm out in Washington State, and there's another one in Louisiana, and
yeah.
that's what makes it happen. Now, the people behind LIGO, or some of them, Barry Barish and Kip Thorne of Caltech and Rainer Weiss at MIT, got the Nobel Prize in Physics this year because of LIGO. Do you expect that we're going to be hearing more about LIGO, about gravitational waves, in the coming years as they discover more things?
Well, I've thought deeply about this question, and I think I know how to answer it. Yes. yes, it is stunning what this is going to do to open up a new field of physics. The Nobel Prize Award went for the machine. I mean, these guys weren't alone, of course, but they were the architects of the LIGO Observatory. But the things that LIGO will reveal are things that were impossible to imagine before. So if you ask me, are they going to discover new things? I'm going to say they're going to discover things that we didn't even know were out there to be discovered. The neutron star collision was so interesting because not only did they see a gravitational wave, but they saw X-rays and gamma rays and radio waves and ultraviolet light and infrared light all coming from the same spot. So they were able to study this in many different physical ways, and they've learned a lot about what happens when a neutron star collides with two neutron stars merge.
Okay, another item on your list, another big breakthrough this year, the gene editing system called CRISPR was used to modify human embryos. Tell us more.
Well, this was a team in Oregon. Actually, Chinese scientists had done something similar in the past. This was a team in Oregon. And, oh, my goodness, you know, this is the very sensitive topic. So think about it, Jeremy. If you and your wife want to have a child and you both have a rare genetic disease, you would be happy not to pass that genetic disease on to your child, right? So there is a way that you can use in vitro fertilization to create an embryo in a test tube, and then test that embryo for the disease mutation. And if it's there now, what this guy is saying is we can fix it. It's one gene. It's one problem. We could fix it. And then the embryo is healthy. And you put that back into your wife in this case. And off you go to have a pregnancy and a healthy baby. That sounds great. And it is great in principle. But you have just done something where you have permanently modified the human germline. That thing is no longer part of that line of genetics. And so some people say, well, hang on, that sounds great when you're doing that. But what if there's a gene for amblyopia or something like that? Do we want to take that out of the population? That's a disease where you don't see as well with both eyes. I mean, there are all kinds of questions about whether we want to go ahead and modify human beings in the test tube. And there's no take back. You can't undo it once you've done it. And so it has raised a lot of interesting questions. Now, I have to quickly say the experiment in Oregon was never intended to be implanted in a human. It was just to show that the embryos grew for a few days and they were destroyed. So it was to show it was possible. Even there, I guess it's ethically, morally fraught because some people feel you shouldn't be doing experiments on embryos and then destroying them. But it was a remarkable example of what's possible with this new genetic tool called CRISPR, which can modify genes in living organisms.
Okay. One of the most memorable events of the year is on your list. That was the total solar eclipse on August 21st. Let's listen here to Chris Lehman of Oregon Public Broadcasting on our show that day describing the eclipse in Salem, Oregon.
Oh, yeah. It's just about disappearing. There's just a tiny little bit left, a tiny little bit. And, oh, boy, it's getting dark here. There it is.
Now, this was the first eclipse to cross North America in 99 years. What did we learn from it?
We learned that people really go nuts about eclipses. That's what we learned from it. I think it was just an amazing phenomenon that absolutely, I have to say, as a scientific phenomenon, yes, it's very interesting. Solar physicists were delighted. But I can bet you that most people weren't excited by all the science that was going to come out of it. They were excited by, wow, this is just amazing to see. And it was. I mean, you heard it. People experience something that's just remarkable. When the eclipse occurs, there's parts of the sun's atmosphere that become visible, and you can study them in a way you can't do normally. So, yes, there's a lot of interesting solar physics, but honestly, it was just the social phenomenon, I think, that made it such an amazing event.
I was in probably the worst place to watch the eclipse, which was Acadia National Park in Maine. A beautiful place, but also very far away from the, you know, the main event of the eclipse that day.
Well, I was in an even worse place. I was in this studio talking to your co-host.
Right. Well, but the thing that I liked about it was we were out at a restaurant, and a few people had those little glasses that you can look through to see the eclipse. And every single person at the restaurant and every single member of the staff came out to take a couple of seconds look at it. And it was a nice way to experience it, even though it didn't get dark or anything like that.
Absolutely. I did, too. When I wasn't in the studio, we ran out to the roof of NPR and we all had glasses and were looking up. So it was everywhere. It was amazing.
Okay. Another big moment was NASA's Cassini spacecraft, which crashed into Saturn in September. Here's a clip of the project manager, Earl Mays, announcing the end of the Cassini mission.
Congratulations to you all. This has been an incredible mission, an incredible spacecraft, and you're all an incredible team. I'm going to call this the end of mission. Project manager, off the net.
Tell us about the significance of this spacecraft crashing into Saturn.
Well, the crashing was an interesting way to end the mission. The reason was that the spacecraft could maybe possibly have had some organisms from Earth still stuck to it, and they really didn't want it to crash into Titan or Enceladus, two of Saturn's moons, because they had begun to see evidence that those moons could possibly, maybe possibly harbor some form of life. And the last thing they wanted to do was contaminate another planet's life with some junk from Earth. So they said, okay, we're just going to have it destroyed, which it did when it went into Saturn. It burned up and then got crushed. So nothing happening after that. But the mission itself, as I said, it discovered these amazing things about Saturn's moons. It showed all sorts of interesting things about the rings of Saturn. They learned about how the solar system formed. And it was just an amazing mission, 13 years in orbit around Saturn, and it had to end. And hearing that tape, I was in the control room at Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena. It was emotional. I mean, yeah. People were in there crying, you know, losing this mission after so many years.
That's NPR's science correspondent Joe Palca, and we will link you to his list of the top stories of the year in science at hereandnow.org. Joe, thanks so much.
Oh, it was great.